Fantasy Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagland. Oh, man, Corey Majors and the famous and soon-to-be-injured Alec Medford. Gentlemen, I have something I want to throw out right here, right now. Right here, right now. I'm not going to do it again. So this hasn't, we haven't fully figured out the logistics of all of this, but I would like to propose to you the summer of suffering.
I don't know what this means.
Now, this would be a way to bring back and reincorporate the Wheel of Misfortune.
Now, I hated the Wheel of Misfortune, though. I hated it.
And that's why I said this isn't fully realized just yet. But I have an idea. So I had a couple of clever little names for things that we could do. And one of them is Chop Chop. Tomorrow, we're supposed to have AEW wrestler Ricochet in studio. One of the last times we had a wrestler in studio was Darby Allin, and he really wanted to chop Reggie.
Oh, I do remember that, yeah.
So we'll check and see if Reggie has the day off for some reason tomorrow. Ask him to drive up to Dallas to get chopped. But
I don't think
if that doesn't work out, I feel like, Corey, we can go ahead and volunteer Alec.
Oh.
To take chops from Ricochet.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Oh, do you want to vote on this? Or are you a no? I'm a yes.
Kevin says vote yes, so I will vote yes. Alec, I like you.
But I don't like you.
I one time was put in the Iron Claw headlock.
That really hurt a lot.
I thought I would never get out. I really thought I'm going to die here in his hand. And I like dead serious. So I don't even know. Chops seem worse than that because you're taking one in the chest.
I have taken multiple chops from the Von Erich boys, and I made the mistake of, look, you can think all kinds of things before the actual thing happens.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And he said overhand, underhand. I go, however you normally do it. And he goes, do you want the real heat? And I said, a very regrettable thing that I said, bring it on. And
that's right.
That was a mistake because that hurt a lot.
Yeah.
A lot, so a lot, a lot.
I have a question then from the 214. I love the wheel. Bring it back or else I'm not listening no more for 2 days. But why are we suffering? Why are we doing this? Haven't we suffered enough? Like if the Stars lose, that's suffering. We lost Luka.
Because the Rangers people can't score runs. Demand it.
The Cowboys keep doing their thing.
All right.
Like that's why do we need to suffer more?
I'll tell you what. Let's put it to the test. On the Twitch, on the YouTube, Franklin Injury Attorney text line 877-881-1053. You can just text yes or wheel. If you want this to come back,
I'm not arguing against it coming back. Okay. I know there's going to be a lot of love here because our listeners hate us. They want us to suffer.
Sometimes I hate this show too.
I love it.
I feel like I've been very clear about that over the years.
But just like Peace-a-thon, I need a purpose. Remember, we said I'll stay up for 14 hours overnight and do this, but I need a reason. So is me suffering to the wheel again gonna give us championships? Is that my purpose? Because I'll buy in on that. I'll believe it. I'll believe in the sun gods or whatever it is you want to throw my way. If that's the case, if I'm doing this for a purpose, then I'm 1,000% in.
I have it on
what's my purpose?
I have it on good authority that if Alec gets chopped tomorrow by Ricochet, the Stars are gonna win tonight.
The Stars are going to win tonight.
That's right.
If he gets chopped tomorrow.
Correct.
But he won't be chopped until tomorrow.
But the sports gods follow the honor system.
Okay. All right.
They know that our hearts are in the right place, as are our words. And so I have it on good authority that if he gets chopped by Ricochet, the Stars will win tonight.
817, I love you guys, and the wheel is just good fun because y'all suffering makes for great radio. And that's
except for the
Cody.
Time I thought I broke my hand.
And that time we had to dump me whenever I
yes.
fell into the mousetrap pit and said the F word. from the 214 wheel, your suffering is cathartic for your listeners. Okay.
I get
so
that.
I'm doing this for you, the listener, is what I'm being told.
I thought you just said that wasn't good enough.
It isn't good enough, honestly. Come up with
but
a better
I told
reason.
You the Stars would win.
All right. Stars win tonight. Tomorrow morning, Kevin, I'm 1,000% in on the wheel. They
all
lose
right.
If they lose tonight, you two have to do the wheel for the summer.
No. What? Hold on. You have nothing to lose in that scenario. But here's what
Stars.
I think.
The Stars losing.
If the Stars lose tonight, then Alec needs to be double punished with extra chops.
All right. Cool.
Do you think that makes
sense? From the 940, Corey, I'm a listener and I love y'all. In fact, y'all are the only reason I'm a Tolo.
Oh, listen,
other shows are fantastic.
We didn't need to read
too,
that part.
And we love those guys. I remember your wasabi mustache. The wasabi mustache isn't easy. It's not easy at all. But you power through it, you know? Sniffing wasabi is not a good thing for your soul. Neither is sniffing broken up Smarties, which Kevin once did.
Oh, yeah.
He sniffed a whole line of Smarties that we crushed up.
I'll tell you what.
He was jacked for like 3 hours.
As a concession in the negotiation process that we are currently having on air, I will inquire with the bosses. I will inquire with Jesse Holly about a hallway hit redux.
You know what? I appreciate you saying Jesse Holly.
I don't know if that will. I don't know if that will pass.
I don't think that's enough.
Oh,
it hurt a lot.
I think you need to be padded.
Oh,
all right. You need to wear a pad.
Done.
And I think Jesse needs to wear pads.
Shh, nope. No.
But also. Your favorite cowboy is Wanye Thomas.
I do love Wanye Thomas.
We need to show why we're the home of the Cowboys. And Wanye Thomas needs to light you up for the wheel. I think that should be something that we can get done. All he has to do is something he does all the time, and that's tackle. And I think that we can make this happen as the home of the Cowboys. I think it's our responsibility to come up with creative ways to prove that we're the home of the Cowboys for a reason. And you getting tackled by Wanye Thomas. This is something, Kevin, that I think that you would love because it's Wanye. All right? I think that this is something that we should definitely do. I will take that to the bosses.
All right. I will listen to how those negotiations go. And this is
you would love that. I can see it on your face right now. You're part of you's going,
yeah,
yeah.
That would make for a great video,
and a kind of a little bit of a Wanye hug at the bottom of the pile.
Yeah,
and it makes sense too if we did it in training camp because he's like, I don't get to hit enough in training camp. Man, that might be a bad idea. I might want to do this during the season when he's like, I need to be cautious and save my body. In training camp, he's like, I've been waiting 6 months to knock somebody into the dirt. And he's like, it's your time. You're not on my team. I can hurt you if need be.
Wasn't Jesse at the end of the hall like slapping his face as he was trying to get ready
okay.
for it?
Let me just tell you something about that Jesse Holly video. By the way, go back and watch it. I wasn't nervous until he stood in front of me in the hallway and he started hyping himself up like Corey just said. He started hitting himself on his non-existent helmet and I was like, oh crap, what have I done? At no point in the process did I have that level of fear until that happens.
All right. You know what? Now that the creative juices are starting to flow, obviously with creating pain for you, this is starting to become a good idea to me. Thank you, Kevin.
From the 972, cool. The wheel was amazing. My favorite was the stink closet. We were banned from doing that because we got a brand new studio. Perhaps there could be a circumstance at play where the stink coffin would be allowed once more this year.
From the 817, I think we aren't going far enough. Wanye and Jesse need to tackle Kevin at the same time. That was my idea. Yeah. That was what I was thinking whenever I came up with this idea. The other one says, isn't getting tackled a TikTok challenge that got a kid killed? Yeah. That is
what?
But they're just like, they're just lining up and just hitting each other. Like, they're just getting tackled. This, Kevin, is more you're padded, wearing a helmet, unlike last time when the boss told you you had to wear a helmet and you refused to.
That is true. And I almost got a concussion when I almost got run into the wall. I just want to point out that I made it through that.
So, I think that's we don't want that to happen. But we do want fun to happen. Got engaged, using y'all's wheel of misfortune, and now we're married.
Oh.
They got engaged using our wheel of misfortune. So.
Fascinating.
Yeah, look at us doing this.
So, look, we can find a sponsor for this, no doubt.
Absolutely.
All right, so the proposal's out on the table.
You get hit by Wanye Thomas.
Okay, there are other parts of this proposal for the summer of suffering.
All right, okay.
And I think it's going to start tomorrow with Ricochet.
All right, yeah, somebody said, look, you guys are wrestling fans. Instead of Wanye Thomas, go get with an ex-wrestler like Goldberg.
No, because then I might actually get
starting,
hurt.
We're starting this with Alec tomorrow. Is the chop or power bomb or
no,
whatever?
I don't know.
I don't think we can get
a power bomb cleared. Because here's a fun fact: back in the day, we were going to do a thing where Colby put me through a table. This is when we were still CBS wrestling at one of our events. We could not get that cleared by corporate. But that was 100% going to happen.
Kevin was all in on it, too. Yes. He was like, I'm fine. And Spittle was just like, I can't get corporate to approve, guys. Sorry.
All right. In the meantime, go ahead and give me cut number 10. Let's talk about that new arena in the Dallas Mavericks.
Please. 235. We're trying to make a game of it. Flag slam on the brakes. Off balance to hit the shot.
All right. So my worst fears, luckily, were avoided last night. Cooper Flagg did not withdraw from NBA draft. So he's still here.
For now.
It's too late to withdraw from the draft.
But the Mavericks still have to pick him.
Yes, so that 100%.
They
have
to get that right.
So we have a couple of things to go through here. Let's start with Rick Welts. Rick Welts said that the team generated $7 million in new season ticket sales the first 3 days after fans found out that the Mavericks got the number one pick.
Okay.
So if you're looking for a strictly economic reason for them to not trade the pick, then I think that would be one of them, that in 3 days you made $7 million in season ticket sales. And we talked about how they no doubt lost a whole lot of people because of the entirety of the Luka debacle.
Absolutely.
But what I think you're more intrigued by, Corey, correct me if I'm wrong, is Mavericks assistant GM Matt Riccardi saying that not only did it get the Mavericks money, but it has also bought them time and extended their championship window to 20 years.
Yeah, these quotes are a lot.
Okay.
These quotes are pretty, it makes the window 20 years instead of 3 is what he said on the Take That With You podcast.
Yeah, that's a lot of, that's 17 years of Cooper Flagg. That's a lot.
And it makes sense the way he lays this out. But
yeah.
He said, we're trying to win it every single year. And the guys that we felt before this draft lottery that we had a good enough team to win the championship. Now we get the chance to add a number one pick and essentially pass the torch from one to the other. And he did say, which the kid from Duke, as you've mentioned. So he even says kid from Duke.
I wonder if one of the reasons they couldn't say it is because technically he wasn't locked into the draft until now. We need to get Jason Kidd on the show and ask if he'll say Cooper Flagg now.
Next Tuesday we have Jason Kidd hopping on the show with us on Zoom too. So we'll talk with Jason
Kidd. And you know he's telling the truth because he can't be sarcastic.
That is true. But he said, we get to bring these 21, 22-year-olds, and they get to go through it slowly with the veterans, which I agree with. Like, we discussed that yesterday. Cooper Flagg doesn't have to come in and be the savior of the Mavericks.
Right.
He gets to come in and fit in with Anthony Davis and fit in with, hopefully, P.J. Washington and these other guys.
Yep.
And fit in with them, learn how to be a pro, hopefully not be injured a lot. Like, that would be a great thing. And then by the time their career's done, he's the one leading the team on the next direction. But to say 20 years is the window with that, it's such a delicate balance creating a roster. Dude, how many times do we look at something like we're looking at the Thunder right now? Their window is 15 years, isn't it?
It does feel
at
like
at least
that.
The next five, because Shea's like, I know what sure. I signed my extension for. But it looks like, dude, they're so young and they can keep adding to this team. It's so difficult to do that because next guy up is going to want money. And so you're going to miss that piece, and you can't just replace it with the same thing. So it's a lot more difficult than that when you're trying to build a roster every year.
Yeah, that window seems long to me, and that puts a lot of expectations on Cooper Flagg, although I do have really high expectations for him. Now, the other bit of kind of Mavericks news, although Mark Cuban said this like 5 years ago, but now it has been, I guess, you know, reconfirmed with Rick Welts, and they said their next version of an arena, an entertainment district, will remain in the city of Dallas, and it won't include the Dallas Stars. I knew that was Mark Cuban's vision, but obviously they changed. We've changed ownership, and clearly a lot has happened just in the last few months alone. But the idea of having a basketball-only building, I know some people talked about the slight to the Stars and everything, but I think the other aspect of it is having ownership of that building alone.
Just like Josh Harris was talking about whipping D.C.
Correct.
Or their president or whatever.
Correct.
Hey, man, if we have this, then we can host Taylor Swift.
Correct.
We can host the Final Four, and that's what they would like. Do we need it? Do we need another arena?
Look,
I mean, because the city's going to have to pay for that.
I say no, but I also thought that Globe Life Field was unnecessary. So I might be the wrong person to ask.
I would disagree with you there.
Because you thought they just needed a roof.
Just because as a fan, I wanted the roof.
Yeah.
But I also understand the monetary value of filling seats during the summer.
For sure.
Hopefully your offense can score runs too, and that can help fill the seats.
Man.
That's not sarcastic. That's reality.
This offense with the old park, that was going to be a tough ticket sell.
So I guess that is maybe the Adelsons, maybe that group looks at it and goes, I actually don't need that much from the city. I want to build a $2 billion stadium. I only need $500 million. I know that's ridiculous. But because they see the return,
because
they see the value in return that could come back to them.
And the other part is, if you're really forward thinking, you're not just building an arena. And look, you know the background of our new ownership group.
Yeah.
You're not just building an arena. You're building, it said, an entertainment district that 100% they would love to include a casino.
Absolutely they would.
And that's the idea of that way you don't have to worry about your partner or whatever else.
I still don't know if there are people in charge of Texas.
I'm not saying gambling is going to pass. I hear you on that.
Don't like any new business coming into Texas.
Look, I also have thoughts about that, and I think that there should be more realistic discussions about whether you want to legalize all gambling, whether you want to legalize, like, you know, those casino style only gambling. I think that conversation is going to pick up. Not to say it's going to pass, though. For the KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We got the shoddy presser coming up a little bit later, so we're moving Gridiron up. It's time for Gridiron Gravy. Are you still impressed by the 1,000-yard rushing season? Next on The Fan.
Back on offense, Ashton Jenty, breaks free. Has a player tracking him down, it's TJ Smith. Can he get to him, Jenty? Touchdown, get out of town.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, it's time to go around the entire NFL and dip into some gridiron gravy. Now, I wanted to start with a question. It kind of originated our discussions off air going back to A-Chan, who had talked about, hey, like, I really want to get to 1,000 yards.
Right.
Right. And so I wanted to ask you all the question, and then I kind of did a study about it. Do you still think getting to 1,000 yards is a big deal? You as a fan, I'm sure to the running back it's a big deal. But you as a fan, do you think getting to 1,000 yards rushing in a season by an individual is impressive?
Most of our life, how many games were there, Kevin?
16.
And you got 1,000. If you got 1,000 yards, that meant you averaged how many yards per game?
It was like 64 or something.
Really? That's it?
Yeah. It's not a lot. Now it's like 59.
In my mind, it's just like I think of Emmitt, and in those years, he was at what, 1,200, 1,300 yards?
Yeah, 1,400. Yeah, exactly.
He wasn't that low, exactly. So it felt like he was getting 100 yards a game. That's what was the feeling. Yeah. If you didn't get 100 yards rushing in a game, you weren't a great running back. And that was the feeling back then. Now, offenses have changed, so that's one difference. You've also added game to it.
Yep.
So that's a little bit of a difference too. I think that it's important to be averaging a high number.
Okay.
But And I guess 1,000 yards is a good marker, but I think we need to bump it up to maybe 1,100. And,
okay.
And that would be the difference there.
Alec, are you impressed by the 1,000-yard individualistic rushing season?
I would say yes, because the running back position has been devalued so much by the league to where you don't, at least to me, it doesn't feel like you have the marquee names that you expect to do that anymore.
Yeah. Or the touches, yeah.
Exactly. So when a Rico Dowdle type does it, yeah, I think it's awesome. And it feels like there's a lot of those types around the league now.
You know, it's really funny that you say that. I'm not here to dispute that at all, but the running back 1,000-yard season has really come back the last few years. So in 2020, nine people hit 1,000 yards rushing, because obviously you have the Lamar Jackson factor. In 2021, it was down to 7. But the last 3 years, 16 in 2022, 12 the next year, and 16 this past season. So you've definitely seen an uptick in it. And then you have Ashton Jeanty. And that's why I kind of wanted to like compare this all, because I feel like everyone would agree that this was an amazing season. Ashton, go ahead.
On the Achane front, I think that's a guy, though, that wants to prove he's a number one back. I think contract's something he's looking at, and the more carries I get, the more opportunities. I can get more explosive runs. I still think touchdowns are more important, but that's a different story.
Okay.
And back to Ashton
Jeanty. It is actually the same story now, because Ashton Jeanty said that he's hoping for 1,500 yards rushing. Ooh. And, quote, we'll say like 10 to 20 touchdowns.
Dang.
Do you think that is doable for rookie season? Now, this is a very hyped running back, went exceedingly high in the draft, so it's different than your run-of-the-mill running back. Do you believe that's achievable?
What was the numbers again? 15?
1,500 yards and then 10 to 20 touchdowns. That part would be pretty wild.
The all-time record for rushing yards in a rookie season. Do you know who it is?
Is it Zeke?
Hey, he's
Dickerson?
Third. Dickerson.
Yeah.
1,808 yards.
That is ridiculous.
18 touchdowns. So he had 18 touchdowns this year, or that year. He also had 51 catches for 404 yards. Man. So like that was a dude that was crazy. He was their offense.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a time when they didn't trust quarterbacks to throw to receivers.
Yeah.
So they were just like, hey, you better have a stud at running back. And Eric Dickerson was a stud. George Rogers in 81, that was the year I was born. I didn't see that. Zeke, 1,631 yards and 15 touchdowns. So I do think that is a reasonable area to be an exceptional guy. But Kevin, only 7 running backs have had over 1,500 yards in their rookie season.
Wow.
Clinton Portis, Edgerrin James, Otis Anderson, Alfred Morris, which is an outlier, Zeke, George Rogers, and Eric Dickerson. That's it. So it's a tough number to get to, and the amount of touchdowns, he's going to have to be the focal point of the offense.
Yes.
And I think with Geno Smith there, he can be. I think that Geno Smith can work in a run-first offense, especially with Pete Carroll. And I think he's going to get plenty of carries in a Pete Carroll offense as well.
Would you be willing to project it all the way up to there? I hear what you're saying.
I think he's going
to
fall short of the yards.
Okay.
And he said 10 to 15.
10 to 20.
10 to 20. I think he can do that. I think he'll fall short of the yards, though.
But like,
just barely.
If he had 1,300 yards rushing and 10 touchdowns.
Exceptional season.
Don't you feel like everyone would be like, holy crap, that's amazing.
Exceptional season.
All right. And so that's why I just kind of wanted to get y'all's thoughts about the 1,000-yard season, because you put it in perspective, Ashton Jeanty's like, that's neat.
Yeah.
Like, my goal is not
to blast past that. And I hope he does.
Absolutely.
Barry Sanders rookie year, 1,470 and 14 touchdowns.
Golly.
Jeez Louise, dude. There were some pretty special rookie years.
That is.
Like, those are good numbers for anybody in an individual year.
Now, we probably could have played this yesterday. I have still been trying to learn, and I know our audience can help out with this. What kind of drugs are pink? Because that is the speculation.
You're going to get me in to about lose this bet today.
Stephon Diggs. Is that, you know, he's in a video on a boat and he flashed a little pink substance while surrounded by 3 women. Here's Mike Vrabel, really hoping you don't have a follow-up question. Let's go to cut number 11, and he's hoping this will suffice.
Well, it's something that we're aware of, and obviously we want to make great decisions on and off the field. And we're hoping that with our time here on the field today, and that when we don't have a script and we're on the call-up periods, that we're making great decisions. And so the message will be the same for all our players, that we're trying to make great decisions. And any conversations that I've had with Stefan will remain between him and I and the club.
Now, the NFL declined to make a statement. And then Vrabel also, this is tremendous. Vrabel said, yes, he's been in communication with Stefan Diggs, which answers the question they were actually looking for, before adding, as I have been in communication with every player on our roster.
I text them every day.
Which kind of undercuts, like, obviously they mean, like, hey, did you talk about that crazy boat stuff?
Mm. I looked it up, Kevin.
Did you? The video?
I hope I say this correctly. Somebody texted it in and said it's Tuzi.
Yeah, Tuzi.
That's how you say it?
Yeah.
Tuzi. T-U-S-I is how you say it.
Oh.
Now, again, this could have been, as I think it was Sean or RJ said this morning, pink Himalayan salt.
So they were going to a nice steak place. They just didn't season it exactly how he wanted.
There is a pink cocaine out there, though. There is a pink cocaine. Now, I'm not saying that's it, and I'm not accusing him of that. You asked the question.
I did ask the question.
What pink drugs are out there?
Correct.
Tuzi is... does have it. I did see this morning. Yeah, it's most commonly contains a mixture of psychoactive substances like ketamine, MDMA, and other designer drugs.
Oh, dear.
And so I don't know that that's the case.
Okay.
I have lots of jokes. I made Kevin laugh so much before the show with these jokes, but I can't say them. So, Kevin, I will let you move on to the next story.
Yeah.
Jokes free.
He asked if maybe Stefan Diggs had two of those bags.
But I hope that that does look bad. It does look bad whenever yes. you're getting prepared for this and you have that.
The police
going on.
Are on their way, mofo.
Okay, I don't know if that's the case.
And he's already had a couple of, like, not this kind of instance, but he's already had a bunch of things that you're just like, dude, what's going on?
And especially when people maybe don't think you're that good anymore.
Yeah. And you got to prove yourself. And maybe he's just like, look, I got all the money. I'm ready to be done now.
Let's go to cut number 12. Joe Flacco is not having your media nonsense, Corey. The question, I don't remember if the question's in here or not, is about, like, being a mentor to the younger quarterbacks. And Joe Flacco doesn't have time for your bull crap today.
It's a talking point. You can kind of, like, use it, like, because it's a good question to bait somebody into answering. And no matter how they answer it, it kind of makes the guy that's answering it look bad. If I say I don't want to be a mentor, I look bad. If I say I do want to be a mentor, then I look like an idiot that doesn't care about being good and playing football. So it's one of those questions that no matter what I say, you guys can write what you want to write about it. And there's a lot of questions like that. That's why you end up having to try to avoid them. I tend to try to be honest. And I've said, I'm not a mentor. I play football. And in a quarterback room, there's a lot of times already. There's been already a ton of times where there's learning experiences. And I have a lot of experience. And I can talk on things. And hopefully they listen. But it's not necessarily, like, my job to, like, make sure they listen to me. And, you know, hey, like, hopefully you have a really good relationship with the guys that are in the room. And you naturally want to do that. You know, but that was a long-winded answer, but that's ultimately why I think you guys ask it, you know.
I think there's a better way. I like the last part of what he said. A lot more than the first part of it, because we don't walk around this building going, Alec, we are going to mentor you. Like, that's not...
that would be neat.
But over the time, maybe we should. He asks advice, we give advice, he learns by watching us and what to do and not to do. Gavin Dawson didn't say, Corey, I'm going to be your mentor, but I listened to Gavin Dawson a lot and was like, man, that's a real, I enjoy that radio show. There've been a lot of other people that I've reached out to that didn't realize they were giving me advice to help my career, but that was the way that it happened. And I think you can do your job and also mentor people at the same time without having to be like, come get under the wing and let me tell you how to live your life.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily the case. So I disagree with Joe Flacco in that I think he can give a really good answer to that question. But I understand that he's been bitten probably a couple times.
I guess
that's probably it for him.
I've never thought that somebody who's a mentor was an idiot who didn't care about football.
No,
that felt kind of harsh.
So that's the idea, is that if you're the mentor backup, you're no longer a starter and you don't have the starter mentality.
Yeah. I guess I've just never thought that. But if that's the way he feels, then I appreciate that's the way he feels. Doesn't sound like he's super fired up to be their backup, though.
Not at all.
Which I bet most people wouldn't be. All right. I'm going to go ahead and report on the Cowboys' next signing for you. All right. This is based on nothing but my history of being a Cowboys fan.
Okay.
Dallas Cowboys are going to sign Von Miller. Now, Von Miller used to be quite good. And the Cowboys love to pick up players on the cheap who either were highly drafted or used to be quite good. Von Miller said he still has plenty to offer and he wants to continue to play, added, I'm a locker room guy through and through, and I can still roll out of bed and rush the passer. That's what I got. Buffalo Bills released Von Miller. Last year, he made zero starts, but he did sack the quarterback 6 times. Do you want to go ahead and agree and predict that the Cowboys will sign Von Miller and talk about how they just signed a future Hall of Famer, and that just means the end for every other NFL team?
The league minimum is $1.21 million for somebody who's served over 7 years.
Okay.
If he was to sign up for that,
then you're in.
Then I'm in. Okay. Right now, otherwise, like, this team needs defensive tackles more than they need him.
When does what the team need matter? Who's going to get the headlines? Von Miller's going to get the headlines. Whatever defensive tackle you want that I've never heard of, that's not going to get the headlines.
I appreciate.
What's your point?
Yeah.
My point is sometimes you guys don't care as much about winning as headlines. Thought I made that clear, but want to make it more specific.
I appreciate you, Kevin, doing your sarcasm bit for me today. Thank you.
Now, let's talk about England. America's original enemy. So, is that hurting some people's feelings? I'm sorry. The NFL London ticket system crashed, much like their attempt at keeping us under their thumb without representation for their taxation, due to exceptionally high demand for tickets. The system crashed this morning in the UK and Ireland. Does that mean we need to give London more games? Or
more games.
Do you think if we gave London more games, they would ignore it and throw all those games into the harbor? And they'd be like, we don't care. We have our own games.
I
promise this story is a legitimate story. My commentary around it, you might not care for. The story is real.
I think that they're just learning, Kevin. They didn't realize the impact the NFL made on their economy.
Okay.
And now they're seeing that it basically runs most economies.
Hmm. Interesting. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's hear from Dallas Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer right here on The Fan.
The final seconds tick away, and the Florida Panthers are going to the Stanley Cup Final for the third year in a row. The Panthers win Game 5, 5-3. They finish off the Canes in 5 games. The Panthers are Eastern Conference champions in 2025.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We should be hearing from Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer in just a couple of minutes. But last night, 5-3. Panthers win, finish off the series 4-1, the defending champions back in the Stanley Cup Final. So if you're still hoping that the Stars can overcome, win 3 straight, make it to the Stanley Cup Final, that's who you have waiting on the other side.
All right. I think that the Stars tonight can score a couple goals and put themselves in good position to play against Florida after a couple more wins.
Okay. Do you really think that?
I do.
All right. I like it.
Again, Kevin, what did I say yesterday? 1 goal.
Yeah.
Get 1 goal, then get another one. Win 1 game, then win. Like that's the mentality at this point you have to take, is How do we fixate on the one thing that we need right now and then keep doing the things that it takes to get that one thing?
Brian Schottenheimer's ready and on time right here on The Fan.
Yeah, we do. We do have a big game.
I don't know what you care about.
Some people do. I was talking about the Stars.
I was talking about the Knicks.
Hey, we're talking about different things.
Exactly. Stars got their problems.
We're in Dallas.
Are we really?
Yeah, we don't care about the Knicks.
Shavo Watkins, Dallas Morning News. What has been your philosophy been with backup quarterbacks in terms of their development in other places you've been?
Ongoing. It never stops. I've had young starters and veteran backups. I've had veteran starters and young backups. I think the quarterback position is the position that it gets so much scrutiny that you're always trying to place an emphasis on, are they getting better? Are they being consistent? Are they doing the things that they need to do? But it really is, you try to piece that room together, maybe a little different than other rooms, because, like, for example, when we had Mark Sanchez, who most of you guys know, in New York, we felt like we had to get a veteran to kind of help him understand the game and kind of what goes into it. And we went out and got Mark Brunell, who was surrounded by someone I know very well, Drew Brees, and was, you know, instrumental in Drew's growth in New Orleans. And so I think it is not a pairing, but it is something you do talk about, the mix and the match and how it looks. And I've been around other or heard other stories where some rooms didn't get along great. And that's never a good thing, but we don't have that here. We have a great room, and with Dak, Joe, and Will, it's been awesome.
Milton, is he more in the, because he just got in the league last year, he's more in the developmental phase in terms of how you're trying to get him to grow?
I think they all are. I mean, I think Dak is in the developmental phase, and that sounds crazy for a guy that's played that much, but, like, there's things that we're tweaking with Dak, you know, so I don't think it's just for Joe. Joe is a guy that we obviously know all about the talent, but, you know, the system that he came from in Tennessee, you know, created some challenges in terms of just what he has to learn and things like that. But the minute these quarterbacks think that they've figured it all out, that's when it's probably time for them to think about doing something different, because the way defenses attack in this league, it makes it almost impossible to ever relax.
Clarence Hill, DLLS Cowboys. Got a couple
right there.
Okay,
DLLS. Wow.
Got a couple of questions. I'll piggyback it on the tweaking things with Dak. Is the cadence the same? Still doing here we go? What are you changing with the offense in that respect?
I'm not going to tell you about the cadence. The biggest thing with the cadence that I will tell you is getting a guy like Joe, and now you got new linemen, you got Booker, you got, you know, Rob Jones, you got guys like that, is getting all the quarterbacks to kind of sound the same. And that sounds like, oh, that's pretty obvious, that's pretty simple, but it's the guys that are the backups that have to learn to make their cadence sound like Dax. So that's kind of one of the things that you do work on in terms of the cadence and what we say and things like that. Maybe you guys will hear it today, maybe you won't. I don't know.
So we're not doing it. Here we go. Secondly, is Micah here? I know he was here Monday last week and then wasn't here Tuesday. And what's it been his involvement with the OTs, if you ramped up to on the field work, and is he just doing meetings on the field? What's that?
Yeah, again, like I said, voluntary right now, the camp. He was here last week, had lunch with him, actually bumped into him in the airport. He was going to do some traveling, so I have not seen him yet this week. But my big thing with all the guys, whether they're here or not, is you can get great work in, and you can get ready, and you can be mentally prepared. But, you know, whether you're Micah, who's not here, here in and out, whether you're Dak, doesn't really matter. You know, it's just put your work in, get ready. There's a lot of ways to get ready and prepared, and I think the league's made it very clear that, you know, it's all voluntary.
Todd, before you go, can we adjust the lighting?
Do I look better now? You guys are scary. It's a big group today, man. Dang, I didn't think it was this crowded today.
White sheet of paper real quick. Huh?
It's live coverage of the Cowboys adjusting the lighting for an audio press conference right here on 105.3 The Fan.
There we go. You guys want to start over?
There we go. There we go.
Mike is not here today. I know he's traveling somewhere. The cadence may or may not be the same. We're off to a hell of a start.
Todd. Here you go. This is going to be like this one. Todd Archer, the ESPN. fans ask us questions about things that we don't truly know the answer to, and you and the visor. What is the visor, and is it like an ode to Spurrier, or what's the deal with the visor?
It actually is a little bit of an ode to Coach Spurrier. So for you guys that don't know, 96 national champs, Florida Gators. When I went down there, I transferred from the University of Kansas, and the reason I went to Florida was I wanted to kind of learn about offense, and at the time he had just started the fun and gun. He'd come from Duke to Florida, and so I wanted to get down there and kind of learn from him. He was great. He actually gave me the opportunity to wear a headset on game days. I had to sit out for a year with the old transfer rules. But he told me that if I went there, that he'd let me wear a headset and be involved and be the signal caller, which was great. What I didn't realize was that what that also entailed was anytime he threw his visor, which was probably 5 to 7 times a game, I was responsible for picking it up. And I can truly – this is a true story. So we're playing a game. I'm signaling the plays, and something happens. He's mad. He's pissed off at Danny. Throws his visor. And for some reason, I was caught up in something. I didn't go pick it up. And he literally looks at me. He's like – I was like, oh, shit. So I went and I picked it up, and he's like – so honestly, that's where I first noticed it. I think I look better in a visor than a hat. I mean, you know, just, I'm losing my hair a little bit, at least up front. But it does go back to Florida.
And then another one, I talked to a couple first-year head coaches in the last few years, and they said the people that they rely on most are game management-type guys to really help them understand situations and things. And I'm wondering how much you will lean on Ryan Feeder as you go through your
career. Yeah, that's a great question, and the answer is absolutely. You know, Feeds is just a trusted advisor. I think he does it as well as anybody in the business. You know, you need, on game day, you need one voice that you're hearing. You know, because obviously these things happen at critical, intense moments and things like that. And so to have that one voice be someone that you have complete confidence in and complete trust in really does matter. He and I spend, you know, hours just talking about different situations. It's been cool having Feloz here because that's another perspective of a guy that's been a head coach. And it's been kind of fun for us as we start the process of game management to just talk about the different ways you look at situations. And we actually just had our first component of it in the team meeting today.
John Michaud with The Athletic. With George Pickens, has there been any moments out on the field where maybe there's something that he did that stood out to you where you're like, damn, like maybe one-handed catch, something like that?
I think, number one, he's doing an incredible job picking up the system. I talked about his intentionality last week, I believe, just how hard he's working. But there was a play, and it really wasn't anything George did. But we're in the red zone, and we're in kind of a spread formation. We hit him for a touchdown. Joe did on a little a bender, like a little skinny post, down in the low red zone. And CD was on the other side. And when CD broke out and he looked back to see where the ball went and he saw George in the end zone, he kind of dragged his toes up. CD was like, yes! So I think his excitement for knowing that we've added some pieces which will add to the competition, it was cool to see a guy like CD be excited. And those two guys' relationship is awesome. I'm sure you guys have probably done stories on it, but they're spending a lot of time together. I think it's great for CD to have someone like George, not that George is a young player, but someone that GP really looks up to in CD. They obviously have trained some together, but that relationship's really cool, and I'm enjoying kind of just sitting back and watching it develop, and the two of them getting together and spending time with Junior Adams, and it's been really cool and fun for me to watch just how it all is beginning to fit together.
Obviously, George and Dak haven't played together yet, but in your experience as a player and then as a coach, how is that relationship between a quarterback and wide receiver? Can it be natural, or is it all about you just got to get the reps in?
No, it's more than that. It's the reps are important, but there's got to be conversation. You know, I simplify it, and probably going back to my years in New York, you know, there's a thing called the me to you factor. It's basically if you're a receiver and I'm a quarterback, you know, I need to have the ability where I trust you to be where you're supposed to be. So it's my job to throw you the ball, and if we're not on the same page, then you have to talk about it and have conversations and figure out why, and maybe I saw it this way and you saw it that way, but get on the same page the next time it happens. What are we going to do? Well, hey, I want it this way. And so it's over time, and it's not just time on the field. It's not just extra reps. That's important, but it's time away from the field. It's time in the film room. It's time at dinner. I think you guys think all we do around here is eat, because all we do is we go to dinner and we have connection. But, like, I think that's real. And so the more that there is trust, remember, when quarterbacks are playing, they get glimpses of what's happening down the field. Like, they don't have a clear window like what I'm looking at right here. Like, there's big trees in front of them that they can't see. So you're really throwing to spots, and you're trusting people to be there. And that's where that me-to-you factor takes time to develop. And I think that's where we're in the process, and that's the best part of phase three OTAs, is you can work on some of those things now and get ready to go, because when you get to training camp, then we got to be at full speed. We got to be ready to roll. And so you work through those kinks now.
Nick. Nick Harris, Four Star Telegram. In constructing this new offense, how much input have you taken from not only Dak, I'd like to hear your perspective on that, but other offensive pieces, whether it be CD, George, Javonte, et cetera?
Yeah, I'll listen to anybody. I mean, this is not just a one-man show. I mean, this is, you know, having been here for a couple of years helps. I think as we put it together, the players definitely have feedback. And, again, they're the ones that bring it to life, you know. When you talk about some of the things that we'll implement, whether it's cut splits or shifts in motions, things like that, those are kind of philosophical beliefs that things I like and believe in, and so we'll probably do them. But at the end of the day, I'm always going to listen to a player's opinion. I might not do it, but I'm going to listen, no different than I'm going to listen to Clayton Adams or Lunda Wells, you know, Flus on defense. I'm going to always take everybody's input and at the end of the day make the decisions based on what's best for helping us win a Super Bowl.
And now that the ideas have shifted onto the grass and you've seen it in action a few times, what would you say the building identity is of your offense so far?
It's hard, because the first thing I would say is, you know, we want to be physical. We're going to be a physical football team. We will be a physical football team, but the league has it set to where it's hard to practice that. So what I would think that you guys will see today is – when you're watching practice, is we're going to be an attacking unit. I think the thing I'm most proud of over the first week, I would say, of phase three and being on the grass and able to run plays against one another, because in phase two you can't, right? You're on separate fields doing separate things, is watch the effort and the intensity of everybody. When the ball is thrown from the quarterback or the runner breaks free, not only the speed that these guys are running with, but we call it the transition. So when a ball is thrown, watching the defensive lineman transition and go running, watching the skill players cover down, watching the offensive line, like that transition is different and it's unique, and we're proud of it. I told the players today, that's the standard, and the standard is the standard, and we're going to uphold that standard. And they've really been working their asses off.
Tommy.
Tommy Arch, DallasCowboys.com. We saw Tyler Booker taking some first-team reps. How have you seen him kind of early on mesh with the guys in that group?
He's doing great. Again, we're creating competition. He's not taking all the ones. We're rolling different guys in there. Rob Jones, we're moving Brock around a lot, moving BB around some. But, you know, he's picked it up really, really well. The intensity that you guys saw in the introductory press conference, and that is what we see. But the best time to watch Tyler Booker is probably an individual, because if whoever he's working with holding the bags and the pads aren't doing it the right way, they get a little bit of an earful. It's kind of fun to watch. So he understands that there's a mindset and a makeup that make great offensive linemen. I think along with some of the other leaders up front, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Tyler Guyton. He's having a terrific offseason. He's working his ass off. He looks great. But Tyler Booker fits in great with what we're trying to build.
Saad,
he's The Athletic. Ryan, we've heard the word intentionality from you quite a few times, and even in the locker room from the players. Why is that a message that you're conveying to the players, and why is that such an important trait?
I think it's important because it takes planning. To be intentional about something, you have to be – you have to sit and think, and you have to say, okay, I'm going out to practice today. Today could be, for some people around the league, a meaningless practice. It's OTA 4, I guess. So, okay, let's get through OTA 4, see what shouting the guys have for us. But the guys that truly get it, the guys that want to be great, the teams that want to be great, they have a plan of, okay, when I go out to individual today, what fundamental, what skill do I really want to work on? What is one of my weaknesses that I want to improve? And not everybody does that, but when you talk about it, and we do, you know, we'll, in the stretch line some, we'll be You know, we're not just talking about the music that's playing. We're talking about, hey, what are you working on today? You know, because if they haven't thought about it, then they're going to miss an opportunity to either get better or just stay the same. And so it's something that I believe makes the difference between some really very talented players that are good players and talented players that become great and elite players, because if they're focusing and working with intention on, hey, this is a weakness of mine, I got to clean up or get better at, and this is what the coaches have helped me kind of identify, then to me we're wasting time, certainly in the individual periods.
And as you've kind of gotten going in this offseason program, have you talked to other mentors, head coaches throughout this, or are you trying to take an organic approach and just figure things out as they go?
No, I mean, you talk to people all the time. You know, I've been thinking about this really my whole life as a professional, what I wanted to do, but there's things that come up every day. I'm kind of like, okay, I wish my dad was still here. I'd reach out to him, but you know, the coaches around the league, you know, spending time with those guys at the league meetings, they were great. They've all been a first-time head coach. I think that one of the things that happens is when you build relationships like I've built over my career and try to do things the right way, that these guys are open and willing to help, and that's great. There's guys like Bill Cowher that, you know, is a close, you know, family friend, was, you know, a huge associate of my dad's. There's guys like that that I can talk to, but at the end of the day, we've got some incredible people in this building that I'll lean on as well, you know, starting with Jerry and Steven and Will. And but yeah, I talk to other head coaches quite a bit.
There you go. Brian Schottenheimer right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're the KNC Masterpiece coming up next. Perhaps we'll talk more about a player that Shotty just mentioned right here on The Fan.